The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. You can put your money to work by automating your savings and investments. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/save and invest.
Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. My name's Andrew, Marcus, Melanie, John, welcome. What's going on, guys?
Howdy.
Man, what's going on?
Hello. You know, President's Day, just chilling.
It's a holiday.
It's a holiday.
How about that?
Yeah, not bad. So that's a good pivot point for the...
So at President's Day, do presidents get extra... What does a president get on the actual
day off?
It's like their birthday.
Do you send them a cake?
That's what I'm, asking. Do they get two birthdays?
Yeah, I guess. Send him, like, do you send him cards?
You get like a presidential birthday, you know?
Right.
For when you were putting office.
If you're alive and you're the president, today is your day.
Yeah, maybe it's like a leap year thing where it's every 4 years.
What's up?
Oh, that's smart. Yeah. But,
we come up with all kinds of stuff. But my point, I don't know. Maybe they get extra presents or something like that. They don't have to pay for a meal.
Yeah.
They probably don't have to do that anyways, but... It's cool to be an American. We come up with all kinds of cool days like this, and I think they should enjoy it. If they weren't aware of that, they should have been.
Well, since it is a holiday, I got a question for you guys. What is the best way to end a long day?
The best way to end? I'm the wrong person to ask because I'm like 90 years old. I'm literally crocheting at the end of the night.
That's your favorite. It's all good.
I love that you do that now. Like, I mean, dude, we've shifted into, like, I'm an old dude now. Bro, I'm wearing freaking overalls right now, okay? And we were driving down the road from the church the other day, and she was over there crocheting.
In the car.
Can you believe that? So.
We're so old. And it was just my birthday. So, I'm another year older, and I'm acting like double my age.
What do you got?
Mine is 100% like having a good meal. I love like barbecuing. So just getting outside, smelling the smoke, like getting into something good and sharing that with family. There's nothing better than that.
You're right. That's kind of a brand new concept for me because it was in waves for me. But the barbecuing coming on, that stage in my life was fantastic. Actually, it came on during quarantine. And think about it. Like, we go into restaurants and pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for somebody to whip something up in an hour or so, if not quicker. Like, them dudes that are working the barbecue pits are on there all night, all day to make that into perfection. You don't look at it like that, but it's the most finely cooked dish there is because it's hard to maintain that, for sure.
Oh, yeah, no, it's unbelievable. I mean, I've been cheating. Like, you Texas boys are probably going to give me some crap, but I'm using a Traeger for my stuff. But, you know, it gets me outside, gets me eating something good, so... I'm all into it.
Well, you still have to tend to that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we have one too. And if I need to like cook some for the, it depends on why you're doing it. I think like, and the best argument about against the Traegers is like, hey man, you're taking the country boy out of the country kind of deal. You know, it's to work the fire because then you got, and check it. It's like this, man. It gives you an opportunity to get out of the house and away from everybody. And if they take that away by electronics, where's your ass going to go? Like, I love going, getting the firewood and coming back and working and maintaining the coals and all stuff like that. But as far as...
The Traeger, I have an app, and I'll tell him, because it's on my phone. And so I'll tell him, like, okay.
And it works.
The brisket
that thing works,
is,
man.
Like, at whatever degree, so he knows.
It'll cook this... Man, it cooks it great.
Yeah, for convenience, it's amazing.
Convenient, it is. I mean, if you don't want to learn... there's a thing with learning the craft, right? I mean, there absolutely is getting out there and learning how that Traeger was actually built. I guess is the best way I would say that. As far as winding down the day, I think your day should wind down just like it winds up. Like, I just recently picked up coffee drinking. So my wife and I would get up, like, that's like a whole ritual. I understand why people do it. Like, sit around and kind of time to think. The wife and I get the kids ready. I take them to school, come back, and we'll go on a walk or a bike ride or something like that. So it's almost that in itself will propel you into noon, right? And then you got the downside. Yeah. And the meals are the best. Mm-hmm. Imagine that your whole day revolves around that ending, that last meal. And then after that, mm-hmm. have some place you can rest your ass and for a comfort while. And the shower is key for me.
Yeah.
Like, if I don't shower at the end of the day, that means my day never ended. Mm-hmm. In my head, in my... Yeah, it's just... It has to... And that comes back from training. It means my days haven't ended yet. It tells my body. Like, it acts... It's the weirdest thing. But, like, if I can calm down... And then have those couple hours at the end of the day to where you wind off of everything that wound you up, like the computer cycle and all that. And that's hard to do at a certain age. It is when she was saying that we're at this age now... Man, routines are the best, bro. Yeah. I mean, because you any part of the day that drops in the middle of it, it's all right. Because mm-hmm. I can get through that chaos as long as I can get to the other routine where she's sitting at.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a reward. Oh, and there's this. Like, if you really like to do something, put that thing on the worst day, like Monday. And that way you have mm-hmm. something to look forward to on a Monday. Right? And then, because there's got to be at least 7 things you absolutely love to do and eat. And that's how you prepare. You kind of start to enjoy the day. It's like, man, what's today? Oh, I get to do this. And life and it will kind of guide things to put in the middle of that and change those little loves, right? It's a love. I mean, because you can get to do it. And then that's how tradition gets started. Because I passed down to my kid. Like on Sundays, man, we head to the Whataburger, drop the tailgate, even if it's freezing.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, just freezing outside. We're out there. I'm like, you're all right, son. He can't even talk.
They always get a milkshake.
Yeah, and a milkshake. Yeah. Of course, man.
A milkshake
Sunday
at Whataburger.
Sunday at the drive-thru, man. And we'll just sit there and people watch.
Oh, that's the best.
Nothing like people watching.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I love to make up a full life story for everybody I encounter.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
All right, man. You ready for this?
Was that our Patreon?
100%.
Is it?
Okay.
Yeah.
What else? You got?
I'm trying to think. Girls talk about taking their bras off. I enjoy kicking my boots off. If I've been in my boots all day long, just that feeling of like, okay, boots are off, socks are off. I'm in the house. I can finally just recenter, chill out. I've gotten better about turning my computer off at the end of the day. That's kind of hard for me. I like to just work whenever I'm feeling creative, but I'm trying to like get better about closing that down, being present, spending time with Kara, making sure she knows like we got to have some quality time. I love her. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Admit that. On air.
She can play it back.
It's in public now.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Andrew loves Kara.
Yes.
I think that's why they invented the recliner.
And
the kids are best. I mean, I started doing this. Hey, boy, come over and help me take my boots off. Right?
Yeah.
There's something about getting in a really comfy pair of jammies, too.
Oh, yeah, just chilling out.
Yeah.
It's like those are the clothes that
take the belt off.
They only touch you in a certain spot, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you can move inside of them. And, yeah, rolling back like that, and that's a thing. That you can end your day like that.
Yes.
Watching a game show. Passed out.
We like Family Feud.
Yeah, passing out in that recliner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like she asked me, she's like, "Get up, you need to go to bed." I'm like, okay."
Yeah, I got my first ever recliner this year, and it feels incredible.
See, you're getting old.
I'm getting old. Like you.
Write the stuff down, bud. We got all kinds of information for you.
I'm learning today.
How to live. We have got a great guest in store. Robert Paylor graduated from UC Berkeley and is winning the fight to walk again after suffering a spinal cord injury in 2017 while playing rugby. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Pumped about this.
Yeah, you too, man. You got crazy never quit story. So you're going to have to kind of set the stage, take us way back. Why don't you kind of talk about your childhood before we get into that day in 2017?
Yeah, 100%. So childhood, born and raised over here in the Sacramento Valley. Hot summers and sports, whereas like what I was dealing with. I loved sports, specifically contact sports. So grew up mostly playing football. And then once I got into high school, I found the sport of rugby. Now, rugby in America is like totally niche, right? I don't even know. Like, have you all ever seen a rugby game?
Go ahead, babe.
I have not.
The university that I went to, some of my fraternity brothers, they played rugby. And the academy that I train at Exos, they had some rugby guys there from Argentina. This year they were from there.
They have rugby at Sam Houston?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. We're getting the best fights against them dudes, man. They're talking about some brawling. Dang, they come rolling in.
Woo! Big old group.
Oh, dude. They roll in a pack. It's awesome. Go ahead.
No, yeah, Houston has a pro team now over there at the Sabercats. Yeah, I got a couple buddies out there playing. But anyway, so I found the sport through my high school. So I went to Jesuit High School over here in Sac. And it's the best rugby program historically. I can't remember if we're at the 10 national championship level, maybe 11 now. That's with the team being created around 1999. So there's a lot of success with that program. Now, I, of course, like had a lot of desire to be a part of something like that. I mean, who doesn't want to have hardware on their fingers and just be a part of something that great? And I was playing football and basketball at the time. And here I am, like, I'm a measly 6'5" dude. And we had guys on the age above me who are like 6'10", 6'8". They went over to play D1 sports. So just being realistic, I was thinking maybe even if I do make the team, I probably don't think I'm going to be getting on the court that much. And so I wanted to find another sport. I didn't want to just be a one sport athlete with football. So all my buddies said, you know, Robert, come out and try rugby. Like, you're a good athlete. You like hitting people and we've got the sport for you. We're very good. And you can find yourself probably have a starting role and doing pretty well on this team. So kind of made the leap of faith, stopped playing basketball, started playing rugby. And man, I just fell in love with it. Now I had to like learn how to play the sport because it's very different from football. You know, it's continuous. I mean, it's 80 minutes of continuous play. You get halftime off and that's it. So like I show up and we have like a little 10-minute inter-squad scrimmage like in the first couple of weeks. And I'm thinking, you know, ref blows his whistle and you go, right? That's the football mentality. And like 2 minutes into it, I was just like wheezing, like hands on my knees. just suffering, dying through it, but thinking that I have never had more fun in my life. Like football, I always have my hand in the dirt. Now in rugby, like I'm getting the ball, I'm getting active, I'm able to score. I was just having so much fun with this game. And that brought me to get recruited by UC Berkeley, University of California, which has traditionally the most successful rugby program in the United States, about 33 national championships. I think the only team that's got more championships than that in any sport is the Harlem Globetrotters, and their games are rigged, so we're doing all right. And
hey, I sure was pumped. Big fan of the Globetrotters here, man.
Yeah,
love them guys.
Yeah, nothing against them. Nothing against them. We're sitting at number two, right below them.
I get it. But that's the humor in athletics. That's what comes with being in that athletic realm too.
Yeah,
people get intimidated by that because what they see is the outcome of all the practices and the times of being uncomfortable with each other and the embarrassment and everything like that. It's, I guess, when, you know, a lot of times people look at that, they don't think that that's part of it, but it very much is. I was telling some of my athletes, I was like, hey man, if you don't look like a fool when you're practicing, you're not practicing. All right, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, cause we either, you don't practice till you get good. You practice till you're just not bad at it. Yeah. And it goes to different levels. And what happens is when you're around guys and the girls like that, when you train hard enough, it like rising tide lifts all the boats. All somebody has to do is shine a little bit on one end, just show a little bit of glimmer or something. And everybody will be like, mm-hmm. Oh, I got it. It can't help but do that. All that has to be there is the bond. You're talking about rugby. Some of my closest buddies, one played for Navy, one played for North Carolina. What they learned, man, coming in, is like a lot of times those rugby programs out here where it's not real big are hidden in small at universities, but man, they're the ones that really turn out well because they don't have, they're not competing against anybody else. They're just competing against each other and having fun with it. And then learning from by watching kind of deal. And it just bleeds over. And all you have to do is just go hang out at a tournament or where a bunch of everyone is hanging out and learning the rules, how the game is played. Once you get that, it's like hitting that golf shot perfect for the first time. I mean, and that happens early in your life. Like, actually, the third or fourth try, you're like, oh, I could be a professional golfer. Did you see just how I hit that? They don't realize that's just the one thing that kind of pulls you in. And it just kind of leads you along. And next thing you know, you're like, man, I can't take this anymore. I'm losing my mind. And then something else miraculous will happen. And that happens, man, by just loving what you're doing.
Yeah, that's sports. And another thing that's so cool about rugby, and you kind of been touching about it, is like the community aspect. So I know, at least for me, like growing up playing football, you know, you go out there, you really got to, you got to develop a hard mindset taking the field. You're about to do something that's going to be difficult. You got to give it your all with someone else who's putting their all against you, like trying to make you physically quit, trying to physically beat you. And that can kind of harden you to the opponent. And, you know, rugby, like, of course we have that. We go out there, we compete our best. It's a very physical game, but afterwards it's so much more social. So it's total tradition, no matter what level you're at, to get together, like share a meal, like once you're 21, bend some beers, like have fun. And you're talking to some guy like,
man, that's how worlds get conquered. Is when dudes like, so when you start practicing like that, and the level of intensity goes up, if you know that, like, you could take this as far as you want, right? And then the guys that are willing to go through that, each pain level produces an outcome in comedy. Like when you're sitting there and you're actually, and what it does is it changes the way you talk about things and how you see things, and you know that they'll get it because, man, you've been through the fire. Hell, you're standing right there with them. And it starts with the ability just to play sports. When we come into this world, man, we're looking for something like that to do. And if in any capacity, if you can compete with each other, against each other, I mean, that's the ultimate lesson.
How many players are on the field?
It's 15 a side. So that's like traditional rugby. Now, if you watch the Olympics, a more like really popular new American in America, the version of rugby is sevens. So that's played seven a side. Again, that's new. Like the old school rugby is 15 players a side. And what's so cool about it too, is there's something for every body type. So, you know, me, like my body type when I was playing in college, I was like 6'5", 240. So kind of like a tight end body type and skill set too. Like I gotta be good in contact, but I also have to have good hands, be able to play like a finesse player sometimes. And then you can get a person who's like, you know, 5'4", maybe 150 pounds, like little scrawny guy. And that's probably going to be the scrum half. And he's going to be doing a lot of like ball distributing, telling us big guys where to go, stuff like that. So you got, you know, tall guys, skinny guys, you know, short guys, fat guys. I mean, everybody out there on that field's got something to do. And the way that you like put that all together on the field is just like an orchestra. I mean, it's just like complete harmony when you can take all those little pieces and the things that people are good at and make that into a well-running machine.
It's kind of like the SEAL teams.
Yeah. one from each. Every size. Yeah. Like everyone thinks perfection looks like, it's actually imperfection. So you take a perfect puzzle and smash that thing into the pieces. That's it. That's the perfection right there, is the imperfection. Hit it, man. And it's right. Because you got the guy, like big guys like us. Man, we can block some freaking gaps, right? But then there'll always be that one son of a gun, dude. I always heard this, like trains run on rails and dynamite comes in small packages.
Yep.
Because there's some guys, like the smart kids who can play, like work angles. Like they can see an angle that we can't because we're big. You know what I mean? Like,
No, sometimes like you throw me in the open field and you got some like fast guy, a lot of space on both sides. I mean, he's drooling. He's just thinking, I'm going to make Robert look like a fool right now trying to run after me. And, you know, if it's short and condensed and I got like 2 meters to go and run into some person, then, you know, then I'm running the dueling. I'm doing the dueling because I'm just trying to go straight over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Strength. Well, and it brings out, and the best part about it, man, is each one of those players brings out that weakness in our strength.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You'd never be able to apply it unless that joker showed up.
Are you tackling each other?
Oh man, that's like the worst sport ever, dude. Man, it's like hardcore, man. It's like guys who straight off the battlefield, or it's actually being on the battlefield. They just took all your weapons away, right?
Pretty much.
Ball. Hey, you guys, quit killing each other. Here's a ball.
Is it like football and soccer combined?
Perfect. Yeah, and basketball because you got to dribble that sucker. I mean,
you have to dribble it.
Well, so
there's no dribble, so you can use your feet a bit.
I thought you had to bounce that sucker once you. If you run a certain amount of steps, don't you have to bounce it?
That'd be wheelchair rugby. You do have to do that. But it's kind of different from the sport of like able-bodied 15s rugby.
Oh, yeah. I could have swore I saw some rugby games where like if they run a certain amount of steps, you have to throw that down thing on the ground and try and catch it back up. Is that not?
All right. That's not this rugby. It might be some other European sport.
Different earth. Yeah.
That was something on YouTube.
One of the multiverse.
No, that's right. No, but like, you know, the way I explain it, yeah, it's a lot like football in the way that it's played. In terms, it's a lot of contact. It's almost like football if you couldn't block and you couldn't throw the ball forward. So it's all lateral or backwards passes. And you're, like I said, you can't block. So you won't see people ever going in front of the ball carrier. That'd be a penalty. They're more like in a support position. So they're trying to spread that field out, spread the defense out, find the gaps, hit those gaps. And if there isn't any gaps, then try and just like punch it up a lot, like suck the defense in. But yeah, with each one of these plays, someone's going in and tackling, and you all probably know there's no pads. I mean, you got your mouth guard and your cleats, your jersey, your shorts, and that's it. And that's what's so cool about the game. And I mean, even, you know, my injury certainly tipped the scales in terms of my injuries in sports, but it's been a pretty safe game for me too. I mean, I won't lie, you get pretty banged up and bruised, but having that mindset of if I torpedo myself into some person with my head down, it's going to hurt me too. That gets you out there, you know, playing safe. We value form and helping other players too.
Oh yeah. There's respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's huge. You get some guy out there trying to just bust everybody down. They get tuned up quick.
Yeah. No, you'll take care of that another way.
You can see them. I mean, the best is when, if you actually look, there's a difference between looking at something, seeing it and watching it. Right. So when you're sitting there and you can see those guys, they don't have a neck. Right, it's kind of like they got the wrinkles back there. Those are bulls. Like their body is designed and postured to ram stuff. You can just tell. I mean, and they don't get hurt no matter what they run into. Like it's like a juggernaut.
Pretty much.
Then you got guys who got them dangly ass necks, man. And they get snapped right in half. They mess around with them when they're not supposed to. That kind of thing. But there's definitely a respect in there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like part of what I was talking about, like how we all like get together afterwards and, you know, bend beers and share a meal, stuff like that. It's like we're talking about best way to end a day. That's the way you end a day playing rugby. And at the end of the day, like we all have to look out for each other. And, you know, we might talk about a bit like how I wasn't looked after and how that's led to the last 4.5 years of this battle that I've been facing. But like, so that's a few bad apples. Like that's not the sport of rugby. And if I woke up tomorrow and I was completely able-bodied, like I'd be looking for someone to put my shoulder into it too. I love that sport. Yeah.
So you get recruited to UC Berkeley, right? To play.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay. Let's pick up from there.
Yeah. All right. Let's go. Yeah.
Yeah. So I get recruited to Cal, and my dreams are like happening at this point, right? You know, right once I started playing at Jesuit, this school, Jesuit, has been kind of traditionally a feeder program into Cal because it's a very successful high school, 2 hours away from the Bay Area. A lot of people get feeded in. So, you know, when we're in high school, everyone's kind of looking around and seeing who's going to get the pat on the shoulder to go play for Cal, to go win some national championships, go to the number one public university in the world, and really excel at this sport. And I was the one who got my shoulder tapped. So I find myself there like freshman year. I talk about that whole thing of going like, you know, a fish in a small pond to the fish in the big pond. I mean, it couldn't have been a more accurate description of that analogy. Everybody on that team was the MVP from their high schools. They're the captains. Yeah. I mean, it's really humbling because for me too, like I trained, you know, with the team, but I didn't do a ton of stuff on my own. Like I was just kind of like naturally gifted.
So you have gifts then, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like in high school that worked.
They separate those on purpose. And it's like each level, man, when you run into them, that's by design.
Yeah.
That'll happen your whole life.
Yeah. Pretty much every athletic thing that I ever did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I showed up and I was set. You know, I could run fast enough. I'm strong enough to do well in contact. Then I show up to Cal and man, it's not the case. I mean, all these people are putting in hours because everybody wants that starting spot where a lot of us are ambitious people and the best player is going to play bar none. It doesn't matter who your daddy is or what your creed is. It matters how well you play rugby.
Yeah.
So I showed up. You know, and at first I was bottom of the totem pole, just kind of putting in my time, getting in my work to maybe the next year be able to break through. And it paid off. I was starting at the lock position, which is kind of like, to explain that, it's sort of like the workhorse on the team. We don't get the ball a lot. We don't score a lot. Mostly what we're doing is cleaning stuff up, making tackles that other people don't want to make. And here's a real crazy thing. They'll lift us like above their heads. So almost like a cheerleader formation. They'd grab me by my legs and right under my butt and throw me up in the air to like grab inbounds or kickoff, stuff like that. Super cool part of the sport. But I was doing well with it. You know, I'm starting as a sophomore, not an easy or common thing to do on a team like that. Things are just going my way. And, you know, then we make it to this national championship game versus Arkansas State. Arkansas State is not traditionally known for being one of the best rugby programs in the nation. I don't know if they've ever won a national championship. On that day, we're fighting for our 31st. So there's very much like a been there, done that kind of mentality. We're not like lighting our hair on fire going out there on the field. We've got a solid game plan. We're composed. You know, we're ready. We're excited. But we have a real strategy behind this. But I mean, this was a dream coming true for me. Anybody who's playing a sport always thinks about going out on national television and playing for a national championship. And then one day pointing to a banner on the wall, ring on the finger to their kids one day and just explaining what that meant. And you know, all the stories shared to be a national champion. Because when you win something like that, you're not just a national champion for a day. You're a national champion for your whole life. So this was a day of legacy.
Is this your sophomore year?
So I show up. Yeah. Sophomore year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sophomore year.
Sure, man. So I'm young, that too. Changes you. That's like getting a degree. Mm-hmm. Only you can feel it. I mean, so people would ask us, hey, man, when you get your SEAL tried and when they pin that sucker on you, you're an absolute, that's when you become a Navy SEAL for sure. Mm-hmm. Were you a Navy mm-hmm. SEAL the day before that? No, you weren't. Just like you weren't a national championship before. Somebody has to acknowledge that. You have to be identified by, and then everyone has to see somebody else. I mean, like witnesses, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that in itself will change the complete dynamic and human behavior in your head.
Oh, yeah.
It shifts everything. Yeah. Right the minute that happens, it's like, man, it's like an accomplishment thing where your mind, your body, and your spirit just figured out, oh, I can do something.
Yeah.
And what you can do with them guys you run around with. That's a real mm-hmm. thing. That's why it's like stepped out through life like that. Some people call them rewards. I mean, it's milestones, whatever. And then there's the chase in that. Imagine if you were supposed to be designed to be something even before birth. And then life's going to freaking beat you into that. Yeah. No matter what. All right. I mean, that's just the way it is. And because life is its own thing. It's a mill, right? And then when you step mm-hmm. into that sucker, it sharpens your ass. And I mean, when with me and you, man, there's been sparks flying and we've been screaming and everything's been broken, busted. And you're like, man, what, you know, how sharp are we? I doubt myself all the time with how razor sharp I am. You know, I am a blunt instrument. We'll go with that, right? I mean, I still beat you to death for sure. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. But really. So my point with that is like, hey, man, that's designed that way for a reason. That's why everyone acknowledges it. Even if you don't even know what the sport is, someone sees national championship playing, you're like, all right, I'll pay attention because them dudes are good at that.
Okay, set the stage for the national championship. Are you getting along with your teammates and your coach and you've got this good camaraderie with everybody? Y'all feel good?
100%. Yeah, our coach is there. I was so blessed to be able to play for a program like that. So our head coach is Jack Clark. Our coach Clark is the number one winningest head coach for the United States international team. And then the number two winningest head coach is Coach Phillips, who is our associate head coach. So you have some of the greatest coaches in any sport, any level here on the Cal rugby program. So we have a really strong culture, a really strong set of values that's what guides us to perform well on the rugby field, but in everything else that we do. I mean, that's the thing that we take with us. It's not you know, the memories of running gassers or scoring tries, making tackles. It's those values that turned us into a high performing team like that. Yeah. So we were really competing well. I think most of us kind of thought that this was like a 99% chance we were going to win this game. And I'm thinking it's just going to be the best day of my life. Right. You're talking about it, Marcus, just how much it means. And you put in like all this effort all year. And it all comes down to this one moment. So here the moment is. And you know, I remember like all those little things like getting up and like eating breakfast, and I could like barely get anything in my stomach. Like I'm just nervous. I'm excited. And bussing over to Santa Clara where we were playing that day at Stephen Stadium, and that locker room environment, our guys are getting taped up, like that low murmur chatter going on. Like it's just intense. Like
it creates a presence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you know, when you walk into a room, man, and you can feel if somebody walks in, they'll suck the energy right out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you walk into that locker room, if you're going to be the national champion, Tim, because you can feel it. Mm-hmm. There's not when doubt kind of creeps in, that's one thing. When anger comes in, if you're the baddest thing in the universe or the weakest thing, if you're in a room together, you freaking know it.
Yeah.
That comes with that, man. And you can pull that energy into you. That's why when people get fired up when someone's around, you're like, oh, that guy right there will fire me up like you can't even freaking believe, man. It's a real thing. People just they are scared to acknowledge it, but yeah, it happens, man. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, 100%. So we're feeling good in that locker room. But I mean, it's intense. Like you got guys who are throwing up in a trash can we got in the middle of the room. I mean, this is big. This is not just about us, like these players. This is about the 100 plus years of Cal rugby players that have been striving for this culture. And I mean, it's a real legacy. It's definitely fighting for something greater than yourself. And so I trot out there on the field. We win the coin toss. So we elect to kick the ball off. You know, we want to like hit him first. So I remember like ref raises his arm, he blows his whistle. I'm just sprinting down that field. Like, pour your guts out here, Robert, just give it all you've got. Last game of the year, make this happen. So the other team commits a penalty and we do what's called kicking it into touch. So we have like an inbounds situation essentially, which is where we do one of those lineouts that I was talking to you about. We have like two tunnels of players, our team, the other team, and then our player throws the ball in the middle of that tunnel. What we do is try to get big guys up there in the air quick, time it out to secure that ball and start moving forward. Obvious mauling situation. Now, a maul in rugby, because we're 5 meters out, is when the bigger guys, we get together in the single unit, we start pushing to advance the ball. Kind of like in football when a running back gets stood up and you see all the linemen like pile in there and they start moving that pile. That's what a maul is in rugby. We're just a little more organized about it. And this was like my moment, right? And I was saying I was a big dude, you know, 6'5", 240 at 20 years old. I was just put on this earth to move people, just moving people that don't want to be moved. So we're 5 meters off from scoring. I mean, I'm like drooling here on this field thing. Let's go, Rob, drive this thing in. And then as I do this, these opposing players, they start making these illegal moves and the referee's not calling anything. So first three players enter in from the side of this maul, which is not something you're supposed to do. You're supposed to come straight in, but ref doesn't call it. Now, first player who comes in, he binds my head in this headlock. You know, he's like pinning my chin down in my chest. Now, in rugby, this is an automatic yellow or red card. Ref blows his whistle, you're out. But the ref's not doing anything in this situation. But yeah, I've got a job to do, right? I'm not going to just stand up and throw my hands in the air and say, what's going on? I'm going to drive this thing in. National championship, right? Pour it all out there. So I keep going. And this other player, he gets me down by my legs. So I start falling forward. And this guy, he's just like torquing his weight down. You can see it in the pictures and videos and anything looking back to where my chin is just pinned down. I can't get my head back up. So when I hit the ground, face goes into the top of my head, goes in the turf, body keeps going forward. Mm. And then my nose just like slams against my chest.
Oh.
And it was just like, poof.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I couldn't feel anything. I could not move anything. I just kind of instinctually tried to pop back up because that's kind of what happens in sports. You start to just run on instinct a lot. And immediately I knew how bad it was. I had broken plenty of bones just playing sports throughout my life. I knew that I had just broken my neck and the lights were totally off. It was just that buzzing sensation, you know, when you're like, let's say you wake up from a nap on the couch and like hands falling asleep. It was that, but it was everywhere. And I just started screaming. I was just like screaming as loud as I could. I broke my neck. I can't move. And they're still playing around me, actually. That's how crazy rugby can be sometimes, is they just let the game continue to go on. So medical staff sprints over to me, and I'm like on my stomach, face pointed off to the left. They just called in the medical staff, and they're asking like, Rob, what's wrong? And I'm like, I broke my fucking neck. I can't move. And they just like look at each other. I just won't forget like the look on their face when they just said like, he thinks he broke his neck. So anyways, we score on them just like a minute later. So then finally like play has stopped and they start running all their tests. They put their finger in my hand. They're like, Robert, like squeeze my finger, like do everything you can. I mean, I'm giving everything. I'm scared out of my mind. Right. I mean, just all I can do. And there's nothing. They're saying, Robert, close your eyes. Like, can you feel this? Can you feel that? I mean, literally just like rushing like my chest, fingers, toes, like nothing. It's horrible. I remember my parents go out there on the field because they were there on that day. Right. And I mean, my whole life, I tried to make them proud. I tried to be like a good kid, strong kid. You get knocked down and you get up again and just keep going. And man, I was on my back and there was nothing I could do. Like I could not be strong for them. And I remember my dad kneeled down to the right. He grabbed my hand. I couldn't feel it. And my mom behind me. And they were just saying, Robert, we will never leave you. We love you so much. We will always be by your side. And all I could say was just, I love you more than anything in the world, throughout all my tears and everything. But I mean, my mind's running wild, right? I'm thinking I'm probably never going to play rugby again, which is soul crushing because this is the thing that made me feel the most alive. And now it seems like that's gone, but I'm thinking, am I ever going to be able to like even see my friends or like walk or feed myself? Like I could barely even breathe. So I get stretchered off this field and then I go over to the hospital in Santa Clara. They stick me in the MRI tube, CT scans, x-rays, all that stuff. And then the doctor comes back. He's just got a bad look on his face. And he just puts it very bluntly. He's like, Robert, I hate to see stuff like this happen, but sports like rugby are dangerous. And you got to be realistic right now. And that reality is you will never walk again. You're never going to move your hands. And we're going to do our best so you can do something like pick up a piece of pizza and bring it to your face one day. And if you can do something like that, then you made it and you beat the odds. And then he also recommends surgery to me, spinal fusion surgery. I ruptured the disc in between my C5-6 vertebrae into my spinal cord.
Yeah.
I had fracturing on the C5 and C6 vertebrae too. And they needed to stabilize that region. They said that if I didn't, my injury would probably only get worse. Like I would have even more of a bleak outcome. But it was a potentially life-threatening surgery. A lot of important real estate right here. My body was already very deconditioned at that point. Going under the knife and an area that's serious, like the spinal cord. He said there was a chance that I might not wake up. So I started calling my buddies. My brother held my phone in front of my face and I started calling my best friends. And I just wanted to let them know what happened and that I love them. And it was probably like a 3-minute conversation. And that maybe I might never see them again, but if I don't, that they know that I love them. And then I call my religious advisor because I'm a man of faith. It's the most important thing to me in my life. And in this moment, like I didn't have a lot, I needed prayers. Like I needed God. So I call my religious advisor to have a priest come out, give me the sacrament of anointing the sick. And before he hangs up that phone, he gives me this little piece of advice. And it's just like carried me. And he said, Robert, I thought it was during, there's going to be a lot of things that you just can't control. But the one thing you do have control over is your mindset. So your positivity around this, your willingness to wake up every day and fight is up to you. This injury can't take that away from you. And my mindset just completely changed right there. That it wasn't that victim mentality. It wasn't, the doctor said this, that's what's going to determine my life. These are the odds. These are the statistics. Like, no, I have to keep moving forward. I have to go into the surgery. I have to just give it all I've got. And that's when this challenge began.
Crying so hard.
First of all, everyone digs scars. That's the thing. And when you go in there and mess around, I remember when I started busting up my neck too. Like, one, two, death's coming for you. Three, four, you can't shut the door. Five, six, you can't pick up sticks. Seven, kind of that whole nursery rhyme. I remember that. I remember hearing that. But check it out. You're not supposed to show back up with what you got issued at all. That's a rule. All right, for guys like us, you're different. I'm sure you're figuring that part out. And I had to go through every ounce of pain I ever had to go through just to have the privilege to talk to you. Like, I had to go my route, you had to go yours. And if something that they pull away from you in the beginning like that is not a disability, it's a distinct ability. That's how, it's the only way you can open that up. There are keys, and there's to unlock every door. And a key to unlock something inside of you is a lot of times it's breaking the lock. All right? I mean, it's like breaking that sucker open. That's what that means. In reality, people look at all of that, I mean, and it's tough. But what it does is it this one guy is like, man, what did you, when, oh, he lost his legs. He's like, well, what happened? He's like, man, I guess I was running away from God. He took him away from me. He said that. And I mean, he said to a buddy, my buddy Michael, he goes, man, I didn't even know what to say when he said that to me. But check it out. What that does is it everything that you loved and what was going into it, sometimes you can get so ahead of your game in itself that your game will shut parts of yourself down so everyone else can benefit from what you've already learned. Yeah. It's like those have to work together, mind, body, and spirit. You feed each one of them, and they get on this equilibrium, right? If you've gotten one pulled away from you, then that means you didn't need, it's like you've worked past all that, and it's kind of like your job is to equalize everybody else around you. Every motivational book ever freaking written ain't written by somebody who didn't go through any kind of motivating stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you got to go through something brutal too. I mean, it's got to be tough. Like it's not going to be something, glorious and easy to do. I mean, the great opportunity comes from great challenges, great adversity. Now, it was really hard to see it that way from the beginning. Right.
Sure.
I mean, it's like when someone.
What would be the point? If you can see it.
Right.
I'm saying totally. All the time, people ask us, hey, man, would you go back through that again? Your response better be hell no. Because that means you didn't learn anything. But then you can understand, there's the other side of you, goes, well, of course, I'd have to. I'd absolutely start where I need to start. I'd start all over again. If I knew that I was going to be able to sit right next to her talking to you about this with these two jokers in the back, I'd have been like, all right, let's do it, man. That's the spice. I mean, at the age you're at right now and how... just because one thing is shut down, it doesn't mean it's closed off. We're in a completely different realm now. I mean, everything's possible down here. You know that because you can grab that iPhone and touch something and it'll show up to the door. Our billionaires are measuring their libidos by their freaking rocket ships and not their yachts anymore. All right?
Yeah.
I've seen some things out there that just are mind-blowing. It's amazing. All it takes is that mindset that you have. It's almost like you have to have the both of those abilities to get beat up mentally, physically. I mean, just so something else can be born.
It's not just mindset, though. It's faith, too, and the fact that he was able to receive the anointing of the sick. I mean, he had – Jesus was with him in that moment. And the faith, like, that is – that plus mindset can get anybody through anything.
Oh.
But you have to have both of those things.
Well, that's – absolutely 1%. That's why she says it that way. Because mine, those are three different things.
It's the Holy Spirit. It's the Trinity.
It's like water, ice, and air. They're all different, but they're the same. So check it. A lot of people come in, you check into this world, you're a body person, an athlete. Like, why did you go to that workout? Why that school? Why that program? Some people are mind. Why those books? Why that college? Why do you always study this stuff? Some people are spirits. Why that church? Why that, why that philosophy? You can see them. As soon as they walk in the door, knowing what happens when you trained your body the way you did and you trained your mind the way you did, when you throw that spirit in there, you train all three of them. Most people don't do that. Most people train one. And by default, the others pick up just haphazardly. And so you'll always be stuck in that one grind. If you give each one of them the opportunity to not only be trained individually, they'll train themselves. And they'll put themselves in life experiences to kind of harden those in there. I mean, life's that hammer. I'm talking about like it just boom. And when something gets nailed onto us like it did, I mean, they tacked our spines down. I've been walking around with metal, like titanium. That's the coolest thing I ever thought. When they were like, hey, we're going to put a bunch of metal on you, I mean, on like an inside. So if I get shot, it'll ricochet. That's what I always thought. I mean, there's no way you could come at me with anything. And no matter what you did to me, I was like, sweet, is that an upgrade? I'll take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I totally. Mean, why not? I mean, that's just the only way you can look at it. Anyway, anything else just is demoralizing, not only to yourself, but everybody around you. So every time I get my ass whipped, I'm like, sweet, that was an upgrade. That's what that was. You got that at a young age.
Let's take a second to
And like maybe it ties into this some way is having a good sense of humor about it all. Like there, even in like those low moments, like I was still able to like just find a way to like smile and laugh and lighten it up. Because I needed, like, if I didn't have any sort of humor through all of this, I would just be like crushed, depressed. Like I wouldn't be able to keep moving forward because I'd just be filled with so much negativity. And I remember, so it was about like 2 weeks of my injury, I started getting spasms, like a lot of spasms. I didn't know what was going on, but it was just my spine, like not being able to send signals. So I started getting these things in my legs, where my legs would like shoot out and they just like reverberate like crazy. Like nobody knew what was going on. It wasn't, didn't like hurt. It was just like uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And my teammates would come over and visit me. They have like a whole visiting schedule to make sure I never spent like a day alone. And one of my buddies comes over with his brother and a couple others. And we were just like talking, you know, hanging out. And he puts his hand on my leg and like elicits one of these spasms. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm using this. So I start saying like, John, like I can walk. Oh my gosh. Like you healed me. I'm fine. Like I'm totally good. Like, what did you do? Do it again. He's like, these guys are like freaking out, you know? And, I mean, here we are like in a hospital, like everything should just be like depressing and sad.
Sure.
But like there has to be like some way for that to break through. Because like life is to be enjoyed. Like it's not all about just overcoming a challenge and like putting in work. I mean, there's like happiness has to be a component, like being able to smile and laugh. And, that's something that really helped me.
Well, I mean, it turns that electric, those sensations that is, you know, that's your spine firing those signals that would normally that you wouldn't feel. That's because they regenerate the movement. So like when that, and when it's, I don't know what you're talking about, that feeling when that, it's like the wires are exposed and it's kind of like goes through your body. Doesn't hurt.
Right.
It doesn't hurt, but it's kind of, sure. That's how amazing the human body is. I mean, that's like a current that runs all that, just like a machine. It's like a race car.
All right, so let's go back. You receive the anointing of the sick. You got your MRI. You're going into surgery, and what happens?
Yeah, so at that point, I say my prayers with my family, say goodbye to my family. Then they roll me into the operating room. You know, close my eyes, just say, hey, I mean, give it all you got. I really want to make sure I wake up from this thing. Was like, that was like my biggest concern, because I just wanted to wake up. You know, that's what I was like praying to God about, is I want to be able to live. Like I would rather be able to live and not be able to move my body at all than not live and not have it. I got, you know, I got a life I want to lead, and I want this to be a good life. So anyways, doctor does an amazing job. He does it perfectly. Of course I wake up, but the surgery was done in a way that gave me a lot of room for regeneration, and it wasn't super invasive on the spinal cord too. But then I'd have a whole nother fight because I couldn't swallow anything. So my neck muscles just got super weak. And then I had a lot of inflammation in my throat too. So whatever that flap is that covers your windpipe when you swallow,
molecular,
mine was getting stuck. Yeah. Mine was getting stuck. So, you know, I'd be trying to take a sip of water.
He knows every body part, by the way.
Pretty good pull,
he
dude.
Literally knows every body part.
Epiglottis. Yeah, I got all that.
He can name everything. Yeah.
I would have said no matter what you said.
Pretty sure it's molecular. Yeah, right up past the uvula.
Flap sounds good.
I hope that's right. Yeah, that just popped in there. I hope that's nothing down near the.
Not the other way.
Hey, I either agree with you or just threw you a freaking insult that you'll never, ever, I'll never live down, but I'm kidding. No, go ahead. Go ahead, bro.
Yeah, so this thing isn't doing what it's supposed to do. So when I'm trying to like eat or drink, stuff's going into my lungs. And that's extremely problematic, right? For anyone in any case, but I couldn't cough. My diaphragm was mostly paralyzed with all so I could muster
hiccups?
Up.
Like when you say when it was paralyzed, was it completely paralyzed? No hiccups?
No, like partially. Okay. My diaphragm was paralyzed. So I could still breathe. Like I could take shallow breaths,
right.
But I couldn't fill my lungs up and give a good cough.
Yeah.
So if something got stuck in my windpipe, I couldn't do anything. We had to have a nurse or a doctor come over and do they call it a quad cough, is put their hands right below your sternum and they start pushing down. Scary for me, right? Because I'm just sitting there choking, not able to say anything. Can't press the buttons to call the nurses and stuff. I can't move my hands. So, but we got through that. They put a tube up my nose and down in my stomach.
Oh, those
it took
are great.
3 days
yeah,
to get
yeah,
in there.
Freaking, those are awesome.
Yeah, they're great. But I mean, that kept me eating. But I mean, I was shedding weight quick. I lost 60 pounds in a month because I wasn't eating. I wasn't moving. And all this work I put into just building up that mass my whole life. I mean, it was gone in a month. I went from 240 to 180 in a month. And then I got pneumonia too. So that's dangerous for anyone, right? But particularly dangerous for me because like I said, I couldn't cough. So all this stuff would get into my windpipe. And I mean, here I am just fighting to breathe, really. I mean, it was scary. There was a lot of late nights of just thinking about what the hell had happened to me and what my future was going to look like too. But that control your mindset verbiage just kept coming up in my brain. Like, you know, doctor comes in and it's 3 a.m. and he says, we got to do an hour long breathing treatment. I had to do it. Like it didn't matter how tired I was. I needed to live. I needed to breathe. So I'm going to do these breathing treatments. I'm talking about a lot of negative stuff right now, but there was a lot of positives too.
Because, No. Isn't the negatives. This is the positive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what Superman had to go through to become what he was, but look what, or Deadpool, like when they strangle you, man, and like they beat you down and you don't die. That's a thing. Like when you come mm-hmm. back, every time you get sick, you come back harder. You don't get battle. You get mm-hmm. battle hardened. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And then when your mind figures that out, that's where that confidence, like a fuel that sets inside your body and yeah. can never be taken away from you.
Yeah.
Once you cocoon up and transition past something, you can't go backwards. You just become something else. The mm-hmm. hard part is trying to figure out what that was. And especially after some ass whippings that like we've been taking lately.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, it puts perspective to it all. I mean, that's one of the greatest gifts that my injury has given me is the gift of perspective. Because before my injury, you know, I trained hard for sports, but I mean, what is that in the grand scheme of things, really? I didn't ever suffer. I didn't know what it was like to suffer. I could struggle through something, but I never suffered through anything. And in that hospital room, I found myself suffering. And when I go through my day-to-day life right now, and you know, let's say I got to wake up early for work, or I've got to do a workout where, you know, now, I mean, spoiler alert, I'm training on walking again. I can walk about 300 yards in with the use of a standard walker now. And in the beginning of it, you know, I'm kind of cruising along. By the end of it, I mean, I'm screaming with every single step. And I remember it wasn't too long ago, I was just having a bad day with my neurological system. And I'm trying to walk. And I mean, I've been fighting this thing for over 1700 days now, very intentional about each one of those days. And I was just kind of frustrated. And my mom has helped me with my rehab, giving me a spot behind. And I'm like complaining. And I like stopped. I literally stopped. And I was like, old Robert Paylor would have just stood up and slapped me across the face right now if he could have, because this is such a gift just to be able to struggle to walk around my house. Like in that moment, in May 6, 2017, man, I would have given anything to have these small little things. And I had to go through something tough to be able to gain that perspective. But that's a gift that I use in my life, and I can help give it to other people now. And it's become like my purpose, really.
Oh, yeah. It's different when you get that. I've had the confidence knocked out of me too. Excuse me. It's tough because it depends on which confidence was knocked out, like your body confidence, or that's different than your mind confidence. Because if your body's still in shape and your mind is not, it won't know how to drive it, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Like you could have like this awesome like mind. I was like, it's kind of like people who work out and stop for a long time, and they go back in. It's like, oh, I used to be able to do 350 and just try to throw that sucker right at man. That's not how it works. Yeah. You got to rhythm that sucker back in it. And it's it takes those. It takes those. Imagine most people spend a lifetime to get the body and the ass whipping that you've already gotten in a short amount of time. So it front loaded all that stuff into you. It front load. You said perspective. That's a beautiful word, because most from 0 to 40, you just have an opinion. You ain't seen enough. 40 to 60 is your perspective, and wisdom she'll roll in later, right? The fact that when, but if you put that pressure, like if you for whatever reason, if life crunched you, like it like a diamond's formed through pressure. Whatever that's whatever it's building on the inside of you, man, is going to come out eventually. Mm-hmm. That's just the way. That's the way it is, man. All right, it's like you literally been in, you got it all up front. Like mine was spread out, right? And youth is a tool, and age is rank. So, man, no matter what you're getting into, man, because don't worry, it'll change. If you're upset about something, it'll change. If you're happy about it, don't worry, it'll change too, bro. I was having a, if it wasn't for this woman right here, some of my days, and it's not the things that you, that aggravate that you think. Like ass whippings that you take now are like stuff that you could normally just easy day.
Yeah.
Like nitinoid stuff is what'll get you. Like I didn't get to eat lunch today, and all I wanted.
He was hangry.
I was. Son, all I wanted to do was eat lunch, and I'm talking about everything got in my way. I got caught in. I'm walking out of the church. No one would believe the stuff that happens to me unless there's witnesses.
We had to go.
The
pick
door
up
grabbed me, and I got stuck in this door jam, bro. I mean, stuck. I couldn't. My whole right side was wedged, and I had these flowers buckets. It's the funniest. There was a video camera right here.
This happened. This is why we were late.
This is why I was late.
Get on with you.
I was stuck in the church. Not I wasn't at church. I was stuck in the church.
In the doorway. We had to go pick up some flowers from church.
Dude, grabbed me by the pants. Dude, was like, hold on for a second. All I wanted was a damn sandwich, man. And everything got in my way. That's how they get me. Because then I was supposed to come in here and be like, hey, I'm going to motivate you, bro, like you can't believe. And when I walked in here, man, I was having a moment.
Yeah, he was hangry for sure.
I was, most definitely. And then I look up at you and I was like, all right, there's guys out there that got to pull their strings, you know, and it got pulled early.
Are
like,
you 24?
25 right now.
Okay, I was trying to do the math on it. So you're our son's age. Yeah. He'll be 24 in 2 weeks.
It's a give and take, man. It's a give and take. I mean, because every day, everybody, you got to get tried. Like, they got to push you somehow. How I get my ass kicked is hilarious. I mean, you can make comedy movies out of it now. What you've gone through in your life ahead of you, man, you can't even believe. You're just in training still. You're still prepping. Mm-hmm. Always look out like that, man. The minute you get down on yourself, you can't believe what everybody else get around you.
Well, wait. So you get through your surgery and you're having this hard time breathing and the hard time with your throat and everything. At what point were you able to even move?
So in the beginning when I couldn't move anything, that was more like spinal shock. So it wasn't like a chronic injury that caused me not to be able to move anything from my neck down. But I'd say probably just like in the first 3 days, my body started waking up and having more like a long-term presentation of like your typical C5-6 injury. So I couldn't move my triceps. So I couldn't like put my arm above my head. I couldn't itch my nose, had nothing in my hands. And then from about like halfway to the chest down, not a single movement. I mean, not a twitch. And then I had like deep pressure sensation. So you could put like a knife in my leg and it wouldn't have hurt, but I'd say, oh, there's something there. Which these things become really relative when an injury like this happens. So that was a good thing. I meant I have an incomplete injury, but I didn't get any movement below my injury level till 6 weeks into my injury. It was an exercise I would do every day, multiple times a day when it was like low point in my rehab, but just kind of like a break or like late at night and I couldn't sleep. I would try to move each of my muscles. So I'd start up with like my upper traps, just shrugging my shoulders. Like I'd do it 20 times. And then I'd move a little bit further down, like to my triceps. I'd be like laying on my back, trying to like extend my arm out. Man, I get nothing. Like squeeze your hand, Robert, nothing. All the way down to my toes.
Explain that. Explain what nothing is. What does that mean? So I mean, because in your mind, you're like, okay, normally you don't have to think about stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I would be like, all right, I'm going to turn myself into a thought. And I'm going to run down from my head down into where it's at and yell at whatever's in the way of that.
Mm-hmm.
To try and just to feel the footsteps of my thought. I mean, that's how I had to do it, right? And then you kind of get the...
That's me too.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought.
So if you're in the hospital bed, are you able to even move your arms or there's just no control of movement?
That's a good
one. So I could probably like touch my chest or something like that at first. Or, I mean, like kind of move my arms maybe a few inches off the bed or something for the first few days. And then, but like I said, nothing on my hands, stuff like that. So it probably wasn't until like a couple of weeks into it when I had good control of my shoulders, my biceps, and I could move my wrists up like this, but that was it. So I couldn't, like if I was laying back, I couldn't itch my nose because my tricep would just flop. So, I mean, it was like, I just had like this floppy arm. I could move my shoulder, but not the other muscle to like, to keep my arm up above my head. So I found myself in a place where I really couldn't do anything for myself. I could speak and think, which is an amazing thing. I just can't imagine if I didn't have that. It's such an amazing,
dude. Yeah.
Yeah. And I met a lot of people who didn't have that too. Because when things really started changing around for me was that 1 month point when I found a new hospital called Craig Hospital, and they're right outside of Denver, Colorado. They specialize in spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injury recovery. And I show up there and I mean, everyone's dealing with the same situation as me. Some of them worse. Like I'm thinking this is not going to be some pick me up of a place, right? This isn't going to be some pretty picture. And man, I show up and like these patients, like they're all just like happy. They got smiles on their faces. You kind of want to like shake them by the shoulders and say, you know, hey, you're supposed to be sad and depressed. Like, what are you doing? I mean, do you like blink twice if you need me to help you escape out of here? It was just like, it was so surreal, but that was the mindset of this place. And I loved it. I dug it. And I talked to them. I'd say, I'm like, work me harder than you've ever worked anyone ever before. I am 100% dedicated to this. I unenrolled from UC Berkeley for a year. I was like, I'm not going on some vacation to Denver, Colorado and go around the Rocky Mountains. I came here to move my body again. Because in the end of the day, like I always knew I would be okay if I wasn't able to walk again, or I wasn't able to like move my hands and have my independence back. Like I'm going to be okay with that because I saw a lot of people who are quadriplegics in wheelchairs. They live very good lives, happy lives. That's going to be okay. But if I look back on the end of the day and I know that I didn't give it everything I had, that would eat at me forever. I wouldn't be okay with that. So I showed up to Craig and I was ready to go. And it was about 9 hours of rehab a day. And it's just like what you were talking about, Marcus, of like just trying to find that track somewhere in your head. I mean, thinking of like just sending a signal and routing it throughout your spinal cord to do something like be able to open up your hand. I mean, I found myself doing things like for rehab, I started off just trying to pick up marbles and put them into another jar or a really basic things, try to feed myself, try to just be able to wiggle my toes. And it like started to wake up. So the first bit of movement I got was in my hamstring. I was doing that exercise, moving my muscles head to toe. And I was focused on the hamstring. It was my left hamstring. And I was laying on my right side, just staring at that hamstring, trying to see something. And I got like a little tiny twitch. I mean, it was like blink and you miss it. But it was something. I look again, I twitch it again. My mom wasn't in the room. I mean, I call her into the room. I call all the nurses, like everyone and their mother, to watch me twitch this freaking hamstring. But when I saw that, I was said, okay, like game on. We've got a signal going all the way from my brain down to my legs. Like I can work with this. And the hospital staff, I mean, it was like smelling blood in the water too. They're like, hey, look, we're going to get you up into these exoskeleton apparatuses. We're going to be hooking E-stim onto your legs. We're really going to work with this. And I'm kind of thinking, you know, hey guys, like I can twitch my hamstring, but like, don't go too far. I ain't walking around, but I mean,
well, man, that's where that schoolhouse comes in. Cause with us, that's exactly what it is. It's like, if I can swallow them and give me this thought, then I can roll it all the way down and just see. All you need to do to get rid of that complete depression is see that little twitch.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can actually go back to bed and rest for a little bit. All you needed to know was there was that connection there. And when they came in with all that hardware on me, I was like, whatever you want to put on me is fine. I'll take, you know, make me grow 8 feet. The armor, you got Iron Man suit, throw that thing in there too, dude. I'll be like that, bro.
Like
the RoboCop series. I mean, I didn't have anything. What else? I didn't have anything else. And then it was like a cool story. For whatever it is with us, man, that's a thing. It's like, man, that's a damn cool story. It just is. I mean, who else going to do it? Somebody got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an honor to get these. It's a privilege, man, to take pain. And when she's done with you, she'll leave you. But what's left in there is the work she did. Everything she busts up while she's inside of you, that's one thing. But what she's fixing in there and what she leaves is something completely different. Mm-hmm. If you get mad about, you know, everything, how she works, then that's one thing. You can get hung up on that for sure. But man, it's tough to look past that, especially when you're born into the body. It's tough, man. The weirdest thing for guys like us is when they take that away. I mean, you want to talk about, I didn't know what to do when I couldn't feel. It's almost like getting put into an avatar and learn how to drive it again. Like, all right, what does this feeling do? What does this thought make this do? That kind of deal?
Yeah.
But when you got everybody around you and the people on that flow state, man, it's like that energy will perpetuate itself. It's like hooking you up to car batteries. It's like, man, we'll put so much charge in your ass that you can't even believe it. Matter of fact, man, hey, you get to where you walk it. You get to where you run a marathon, I'll do it with you. And that says a lot. Y'all heard me, man, because I don't run.
Whoa.
That's big. I mean, like, at all.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing out. I'm not trying to bribe you or anything like that. But if you get to where you run a marathon, you call me up and you say that, I'll do it with you.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll complain the whole way. I might even hit you.
Oh.
There could be a possibility I might strike you.
I can take it. Consider that a deal.
You know, that's a big deal.
Yeah, he hates running.
I don't even walk to my damn mailbox anymore, man. Not after I had to go through all that stuff. No, sir.
Oh, my
brother's an ultra runner. David Goggins, one of my best friends. They're always like, let's come out and just go run. I'm like, man, I would rather. No.
No.
You know what I'm talking about? But if you need to. Last time I did this, I just got out of a heart. And I'm clear headed. Like last time I got trapped in this, I was in the hospital.
He was not clear headed.
I was not clear headed.
He had an IV of.
I was feeling no pain. Morphine. I'm feeling pain right now, and I'm happy, and I'm making you this, giving you my word, I'll do that.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you're going to regret that because by the end of my workouts here, I'm just going to be pushing that much more. I'll do some boxing training too, trying to harden up my chin if I do.
You don't have enough time on the earth to get past me with a pistol beam. You got to make it a damn run.
Oh my gosh.
Now, we're not going to win the damn thing. You understand me?
No.
All right.
Finish is a win.
Oh, man. I know he's going to get it done, too. Should I put it like by the end of the year?
you should put
a caveat into this. I need you running a marathon by the end of the year, and, bro, I'll be there with you.
How about we start with a 5K?
Right.
No, that's weak, man. That's a freaking marathon. Yeah, I'm going to hurt myself. I'm going to hurt myself.
If he could do a 5K, that would be pretty awesome.
I don't want to hear about all that mess. I can do that. When you get to that marathon stage, call me. You call me, I'll fly with you.
Oh my gosh. So tell me, like, what is
I'll bring Goggins. Who else will get in there? I'll get every ultra runner I can find and do that with me.
Oh my gosh. What did your mom say when you could first move your legs?
Yeah, I don't even remember what words were said because we were just like crying about it. I mean, my mom, I'm a total mama's boy, right? And I mean, my mom, she runs the house. I mean, she's just got it all together. And no person has stood by my side like my mom did. I mean, she spent the first 3 months of my injury sleeping in a chair, during the nights. Cause you know, if I needed a little something, like, I mean, just you know, like moving my leg or moving my arms, my hands, like anything like that, I needed someone to help me do that at first. And she was there every second. She was probably the one who kept me alive too with that pneumonia stuff. Cause she was the one slamming down on my lungs. At first, the doctors, nurses told her that she couldn't do it. She's like, I will not watch my son die. So she stepped in and started doing that. I mean, she has just been with me every step of the way. And, I truly wouldn't be where I am if it weren't for her.
No kidding, pal. She's the one that brought you in here.
Yeah.
That's an absolute true statement. Great point, right?
Yeah.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being a mama's boy. I'm one of them.
Yeah.
And I've had my ass whipped so bad back to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And now, yeah, her rapping your chest, her way of getting you back for causing all that pain.
Yep.
Yeah, you know what
that's
I'm
right.
About? Hey, but the straight gate to heaven is your mama. When she checks on board, she's like, he's good. He was good to me the whole time. So there's nothing wrong mm-hmm. with that. Take pride in it. I mean, they're the ones that raise warriors anyways. The matriarchal yeah. family here. That's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, always be good to her, man.
Aww.
Nah, she's amazing. We shared some extremely incredible experiences. We one in particular that was a big deal was we went over to Lourdes, France on a religious pilgrimage. Now, Lourdes might have heard of it before, but it's known to be a place of miraculous healing. So it was about a year after my injury, actually a year to the day they invited us to be on this trip on my 1 year anniversary of my injury. And so we go over there and I mean, obviously, like I'm thinking I'm probably not going to get healed and like walk out of the waters that you bathe in. But like I'm game, right? Like let's give this a shot. I wouldn't be too upset if that happened. So, you know, we get on the plane trip over there. The Order of Malta is who invited us out. And it's just amazing. I think they bring like 125,000 people from all over the world come in for this pilgrimage every year. So I go over there. And there was this beautiful, like life-size Stations of the Cross that were going on, but it was up a hill and there was gravel. And you know, I'm using a wheelchair, right? And those, you know, these little tires, they get stuck in the gravel. And so we had a group of people who decided to take that on when normally most people would say like, hey, it's not accessible. Like, sorry, that's just not going to happen. And you'd be like, no offense taken on my part, right? But they stepped up to the plate. So it was the Bishop of the Sacramento Diocese, a couple of volunteers out there. And then this one guy who was also out there to seek healing, he was battling cancer, you know, fresh off chemotherapy, no hair anywhere, usually had a nice big, thick unibrow.
Awesome.
But there, you know, there wasn't there. I mean, this guy was, he was clearly fighting for his life with one functioning lung. And he's like pushing me up this hill and one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And at the end of it, there's kind of like this little cave is what it looks like. And, but it wasn't really accessible from the entrance that we saw. So my mom and this other, the cancer patient's wife go in to check this out. They come out, I mean, like in tears. They're like, this is so beautiful. You got to find a way in here. And luckily we did find kind of like a pathway in on the other side. And in there, it was the statue of Mary holding crucified Jesus in her arms and like looking up at the sky, mourning, weeping, with her son there. And, you know, immediately like my mom broke down, I broke down, just like witnessing like how powerful mother's love is. And, I mean, there was, you know, even a greater realization I got out of this and was kind of like my miracle of Lourdes. We all got together afterwards, all of us like sick and injured people, kind of just sharing our story about the trip. And I was like reflecting on this experience, talking about, you know, Edgar, who's battling cancer, got one functioning lung, pushed me up this hill. And just all the experiences that I had over that last year, it was the first time I said I might not walk again and actually meant it. Like that whole year, I'd have to say it to like my nurses and doctors to kind of get them off my back, you know, because if I say like, oh, I'm going to walk again, I won't accept anything else. Then they start giving you all these speeches about, you know, hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. And I just like, I wasn't about it. I was just like, I'm going to.
That's because they don't know what they're doing. Yeah. Hey, man, dude, that bothers me so. Those are the ones that graduated last out of med class. They're still fools, still yeah. doctors. And I talk like this because I know medicine a little bit. But I yeah. know the first damn thing is that Hippocratic oath says do no harm. And them suckers mm-hmm. are coming in there telling you like, oh, you ain't going to make it. Dude, when Halfley got shot, the doc said that he wasn't going to live. Mojo slammed his ass through that wall. Now look. It's all about who you got around you. That dog's like, yeah. well, you guys like, well, man, if you, cause you don't want me to prove your diagnosis wrong. Cause you didn't study.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause any doctor worth his salt knows that the human body and the human mind are capable of anything.
Well, and those doctors mm-hmm. don't have faith.
That's my point. They ain't been around mm-hmm. long enough to see miracle. Any scientist, you even scientists, like they'll be like, well, this is why this is this. And all of a sudden this magically happens. And then we get this. And I was like, whoa, back it up a second. Hoss, you said magic. That means you don't know. That yeah. means that in every realm, there's something that one of them can't figure out. That's God's little perfection of how he does things.
Yeah.
So the magic words you want to hear, like please and thank you and you're welcome, is when somebody says, oh, man, you're not the right person for this. Or you're not going to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. If you hear that, that's the trigger. I mean, like literally they can tell you, do this, puke. I mean, if you hear that phrase come out of their mouth, that means you're in the right spot.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that means. 100%. Seeing it too many times. I just know how this works. I mean, I just know how this works, man. You know what I mean? That, and that's one of them. Mm-hmm. Remember, I told you that.
I will.
Hold on. I want to hear the rest of
it. It's like
the...
when I get to that damn marathon to run with your ass.
He's not going to be happy about that.
I'm not going to be happy about that. I want you to remember that, Robert. When I, from here, when you call me on the phone, be like, hey, I made it. We're going to run. I'm gonna be like, you must.
I'm not happy
about that. And then I'll get there and I'll be like, hey, I love you, man. Good job. I'm proud of you. I'm not going to be happy about having to run that damn marathon.
He might.
That's all you can think about. That's all you can think about now.
We're going to break some records of how fast I'm going to be chasing your ass to try to.
Yeah.
I want to hear the rest of the pilgrimage because that's somewhere that I really want to go. I actually just looked it up. I was showing my friend on Friday. I was looking up that cave. That's so crazy, but.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, then, or we could just race up that freaking mountain we're going to.
Go back to France.
We'll go back to France and race up that mountain.
Yeah, well, you're just trying to get out of 26 miles.
I have, dude, I swear. Sometimes my own motivation can get me in freaking trouble, but that's all right. It's what I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. No, but going back to the story, that was the first time I said, like, I might not walk again. And I actually meant it. But then I said, but I'm going to be a damn good man and I'm going to live a damn good life no matter what happens, because I have these living angels around me, like able to get me to do the things that I can't do myself. And this injury, like while it took so much away from me, it gave me so much more. And what it gave me that keeps me going to this day and is why if somebody asked me like, Robert, if you could go back and change what happened to you, I wouldn't. That single thing that makes this a net positive is the ability to inspire other people. And that's something that I would not have had if I was just playing rugby. It's just become my purpose for my life. Like, I love my life. I'm proud of who I am. And I had to have that by having all these challenges and getting through these things. And it was just so crazy of an experience that, you know, 1 year to the day on my injury that I could have a realization like that. Now, like I'm still going to be putting in the work every single day. You can put that in the bank that I'm going to be fighting to walk again. And I'm going to look back on the day knowing that I gave it everything that I had, especially now that I have the added motivation now to get out and do a marathon. But
Again. That's just the fact that I challenged that. Like, we have to do a marathon. That's already in the books. You just got to find the damn date. I should have put a year date on just to make sure.
Too late.
I didn't have to do it, and I could just watch you.
We could be your cheerleader.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I know I'm going to have to do it. I can feel it. My legs can feel it. They're like, can you believe that?
They're already hurting.
No, I haven't run since I got thrown down that mountain, and I didn't even run down that damn thing. I rolled down it.
Gravity to the bottom.
My gosh. Oh, gosh.
So what are you doing now?
I don't even look cool while I'm running either, bro. Yeah. I'm going to mumble the whole time.
Sorry,
now,
we've taken up so much time. Yeah, what are you... So fast forward real quick. So you went through your year of pilgrimage, and then when did you actually take your first steps? Because walker now?
Yeah, that was actually before the pilgrimage. So that was about 8 months into my injury. And like here, I thought this was going to be like the pinnacle of my life, right? Taking my first steps for a second time. And I was like, I was getting there slowly, but surely that twitch was turning into a full contraction. And my muscles are just kind of waking up one by one to where I had movement in every single one of my muscles. Now, some were stronger than others, quicker than others, right? But all the pieces were adding up for me to be able to just pick that foot and put it inches in front of the other. So for a long time, I was doing my rehab suspended up by a harness so that I couldn't fall down. But then eventually we're going to take the leap of faith to get rid of that harness, get me up into my walker and start moving forward. And, you know, I did it. Like I took a step, took another step, man, I went all the way down the basketball court and back, my first time walking without that harness. And like I sat down And, you know, I give like my best friend just happened to be there in Denver. And he was like my weightlifting buddy before my injury stuff. Like I'm giving fist pumps. Like we're, you know, we're enjoying the moment, but then it's kind of like, okay, like get on to your next workout, Robert. And then like, I go, I do my workout and I was kind of like, man, like that was it. You know, there wasn't like, you know, adrenaline rushing all over my brain. Like the clouds didn't part and like a, you know, majestic light come down upon me. I mean, I just like walked down a basketball court and back. And like, that's when I like really realized that we can't wait to give ourselves happiness. Like we can't wait to start enjoying our life until something happens. It was like, it was kind of like a warning sign for me. Like, don't think that you have to be out of your wheelchair to live a good life. Don't think that's your only criteria. Like start finding a way to enjoy every day right now. Like have those goals, be ambitious, make the most out of this one life that you have. But don't think that one little thing happening in your life is going to change everything, because it's going to happen. And then you just do it. You just start walking. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, check it out. When the lightning and the clouds and all that opens up like that, man, that's a moment. It truly is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then people, you know, the human dynamic, you forget about it real quick. So imagine that moment, it's thrust, that's in there. And that walk down the basketball court, it's like a forward moment.
Yeah.
It's like to unveil itself so slowly that the whole time you're down here is that moment, as opposed to seeing it that one time and then it's over. Right. Yeah. It's like you get to carry this whole thing up into the point where we got to run that damn race. All right. But that's it.
Never gonna...
That's how it works, man. It's like the minute you saw that the horrible part and then the end game, man, it already started again. So you push those little victories. Or is that shining sky splitting moment over and over again? And then at one point it will, and then you'll remember the whole thing as opposed to that slight moment. It's, trust me, it's better this way.
Have you seen your doctor again that told you that you wouldn't be able to walk again?
Tell me that dude's name.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen him actually. We've never spoken. I'm sure that he's seen my progress, because my story's, it's been pretty popular, like in the area, Bay Area, Northern California, stuff like that. And I mean, the thing about this doctor, like he's not a bad guy, right? Yeah. This wasn't news that he wanted to deliver. Like 99 times out of 100, he actually would have been right. He was just trying not to give me false hope.
Horse shit. No.
Yeah.
Wait, no, I'm not even doing, no, you're not doing that. Man, you got a nice guy. I know plenty of nice guys that shouldn't be doctors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between a healer and somebody who motivates you, as opposed to somebody who's like, man, I'm going to throw you away because you kind of, I'm sorry. I've had too many docs. When they come wheeling me in there, my doctor's like, let's see if we can get this joker to do.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
they just, they're staying by.
That's what I had at Craig Hospital, right? Like they were perfect. And like, I'm not trying to defend him or what he said. I'm just saying like, he's not just like inherently a horrible person.
Yeah.
But the thing I was trying to get to is he was trying not to give me false hope, but he could have given me false hopelessness. And that's worse than giving someone false hope, because I mean, what if I were to have taken his words as fact and not gone for it? I mean, I certainly wouldn't be here today having this conversation. I might not even have been here at all when I really had to fight through it. So I haven't spoken to that doctor before, but I mean, that's something for everybody to realize who has to deliver news to some person, is to take the Craig Hospital approach. And what they did is they're like, we don't know what's going to happen. You might walk out of these doors one day. You very well might not. But the one thing we do know is we're going to give it everything we've got to fight this thing. And that was like, that was perfect. I don't know, but we're going to give everything that we have.
Well, man, that's the difference in doctors. And I go back to that Hippocratic oath, do no harm, and then thou shalt not kill. Because you can kill the spirit. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people aren't strong like you. And when their doctor says something to them, like that white coat, when you see that, that's a privilege we give you.
Yeah.
Because when you say, take this, do that, we freaking do it. Like if you say, hey, man, you're not coming back, they'll tell people, man, you ain't going to live 3 months, and them suckers will die. Because they're just, man, it's almost like the instruction manual just told you to turn, you know, that kind of deal. No, man, you tell them like, hey, you're capable of anything and everything you want to do. It's up to you. I put you together. I just don't, you know, when it comes to docs, man, there shouldn't be any of that. You ain't going to do this. You ain't going to do that. I just don't, I never had any of those doctors.
It also goes back to...
I never had one of them dudes.
To faith, because the doctors that Craig knew that they aren't in control.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, and it's really up to him. Yeah. They don't know if he'll be able to walk again, but they're going to try everything, and through faith, through will, through work and determination, it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying...
Man, look at him right now.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, but that shows you, it's whether it's a doctor or a person... or a victim or whatever it is, if you don't have faith, then you're just stuck because there's nothing else to live for. You were injured, you were whatever it is. I mean, no matter what kind of victim it is, if you don't have faith, what else is there to live for?
Yeah, once everything else got beaten and broken. Yeah.
That, I mean, that you have to have that. And the people that end up pulling themselves out of darkness is because they have faith that there is something brighter on the other side.
Yeah, that's why guys like us get cast down in there. I was like, if you didn't break some of the guys who had the faith and send them down into hell, then everyone down there would be miserable. I mean, there'd be no way to get out. There'd be no way to turn your life around. You actually have to hurt some of the good ones. It's not even a hurt thing. It's like a reconfiguring, right? Get your ass down in there and help some folks. Right? Yeah. I mean, that's how you have to look at it, because that's what it
is. There's a saying, it's God gives his toughest challenges to his toughest soldiers.
Damn right, and it does.
Yeah, that's like
honor in that. We have our own little gallery in heaven with all our war trophies. Like, hey man, you're part of that. I'm serious. Like, we come kicking the doors in and go in there to eat, bro. Just wait till you see what that place looks like.
So you did go back to school, right? And you finished.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So I went on that trip to Lourdes after a year. And then after that 1 year of really just 100% dealing with my rehabilitation, then I returned back to UC Berkeley to get my degree from the Haas School of Business Administration. And I mean, it was a grind, right? And I was really thrown into the deep end because I didn't want to have any caretakers. At that point, I had some good motion in my legs, my trunk was coming back, so I could get myself dressed and I could shower myself, make dinner, do all those little things that I needed to do. But when like my phone falls on the ground, like under the table, I can't say like, you know, mom, like come over here, I need you to help me pick up my phone. Or I mean, it's me. Like sometimes I'd have to spend like a half hour just trying to do something like really simple like that. But I mean, it was such a gift to be back at Cal, like living my life, the life that I always wanted to live. And I have my teammates by me every single second. We actually, so the hills of Berkeley, like y'all have probably been to San Francisco, that area. I mean, you know, it's just hills for days, right? And I don't care if you're the Lance Armstrong of wheelchair pushing, those hills are going to win. And I needed help.
Bro,
so,
they make movies about the hills out there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It's beautiful. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, not good for a wheelchair. You know? So my teammates and my team, my coaches, we set up this spreadsheet of all my classes, my workouts, where I needed to be, when I needed to be there. And then my teammates would sign up for those slots to help me get around the campus and like just someone to talk to, you know, just someone to like be with. And I mean, they were lugging my body up all those hills and helped me with my workouts. The training that I did for my rehab, because I wasn't going to stop that, right, was with our associate head coach, Tom Billups. He's also our strength and conditioning coach. Like I didn't even have to ask him. He started just coming up to me, made a couple trips out to Denver, and he's like, okay, what do I need to start studying right now? What do we need to do so that when you get to Cal, we can keep the foot on the gas? Some of my best progress was working out with Coach Billups, the rugby coach. I mean, that just speaks to the strength of the program. That it doesn't matter if you got your name on the roster and you're throwing your jersey on to go compete.
That's the best part about having the team. Hell, that's a workout in itself. Like, sign the team up. It's like, hey, man, you got to push his ass all over campus. That's today's workout.
Yeah.
They
loved it.
It's hard to forget that because you get into the situation and team environment where you're always wanting to, you work out hard, you train hard for the other guy. It's like, I'm measuring my spot just so I can be out here to watch you do your thing, dude. It's like magical to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when you get hurt, It's like, and they're trying to take care. You see a side of them that it's the same side that we get when we're on the field, but it's just different, right? It's like, and they're trying to take care. I don't want you taking care of me. They're like, fool, I take care of you on that field every day.
That's right.
I mean, why the hell you think you can play? Because I'm covering down on you. So don't get on to me about doing it like when you get like this. It's the same thing. We just take our uniforms off and everything changes. You know, it looks differently, but it is, man. That's what love is. It's tough and it's forgiving. It's all that.
That's really awesome. And it shows the character of your coach that he continued to show love and interest, you know, in your rehabilitation. And that's really cool that he did that.
Yeah. He's just an amazing human being. Or you don't see that happening in Rot. I mean, no programs. These injuries happen a lot. They happen every single day. Like, people today are going to be breaking their necks. They're going to be taking on that challenge that I've been taking on for the last 4.5 years, but almost nowhere do you see the kind of support that I've had. And I don't think it has anything to do with me. It has everything to do with them. And just how good of people they are. I'm just extremely grateful to everything that I had. And like, but you gotta be able to like be willing to ask and accept help too. That's something that was tough for me to learn at first, because I hated like asking for help before my injury, like especially with little simple things that anybody else can do. But I had to be vulnerable that way. Let that guard down and be willing to ask for help, because my life would have been a lot harder then and still now if I wasn't open to that. So had to have it. But I mean, I wouldn't have graduated without my teammates 2 years later. I wouldn't have been walking across that stage with Coach Phillips if it wasn't for the 2 years that he put in to help me get where I am today. I mean, I owe everything to that program, that team.
So were you able to actually walk on the stage?
Yeah, that's right. So when I graduated, that was like peak COVID. So that was, I graduated in May of 2020. You know, this whole thing started in March of 2020. So, you know, ceremony was canceled and I was really looking forward to that. I worked my tail off to be able to have that accomplishment, right? That was like the light at the end of the tunnel kind of. And then, I was getting my degree. I was getting back on my feet to be able to walk across that stage. And then this whole pandemic hits and it's like, sorry, Robert, that ain't going to happen. So, you know, of course I was bummed at first, but I don't know, there's a saying that I use when things like that happen. It's compared to what? So I'll just be like, oh, you know, that's a bummer, but compared to what? You know, there's harder things out there in life. But August of 2021, just this last August, we were able to get 15,000 people over in an outdoor auditorium in Berkeley. And man, I was like, had this pregame jitters kind of feeling before that, thinking I can't screw this up, because I actually, when I returned back to Cal, I walked on the football field during a football game. So there's like 50,000 people there. And I was just going to walk about 10 yards, which is something that I did very regularly, very consistently, easily. But, you know, it changes when you got 50,000 people all like laser focused right on you. And I remember like I stood up and Coach Phillips at the time had to kind of block my knees with his knees and give me a lift. And then I'd get in my walker, he'd go behind me and we'd go. And it was just so loud. You know, all these people were excited to have me back that we couldn't really communicate the way that we needed to. So I stood up and my hips weren't like totally under me. And then Coach Phillips went and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like I started falling. Oh, and I got a spasm where my knees went up to my chest like a cannonball. And I'm like, this is the way the world ends, right? they're going to have to scrape me off the field like roadkill right now. I mean, this is like not good. But Coach Phillips like bear hugged me, got me up. And, you know, I pretty much like cheated death in a situation like that. But I was thinking, we can't repeat that for a graduation. You know, we better measure twice, cut once. And yeah, we did. I mean, it was perfect. It couldn't have been a greater moment. And I mean, talking about closing a really important chapter of my life. And when I came into Cal, I certainly didn't expect that it would end the way that it did, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And I mean, I left with so much more than a degree. There's like life lessons and experiences that are going to help me in everything I do in my life.
Oh, sure.
So awesome. Yeah. So are you working now or are you just speaking or what are you doing?
Yeah. So I'm doing a couple of different things. One is I'm the executive director of the Big C Society. It's Cal's Varsity Letter Winner Society and Alumni Network. So I help, you know, connect athletes with alumni just build an affinity and pride for Cal because I love this school so much, means so much to me. And then what I'm also doing, which I'm extremely excited about, and this is what I want to be like my full-time thing, all in going forward, is speaking, is sharing the story and the tools that have helped me to overcome quadriplegia that other people can use to overcome the challenges that they face in their lives. And you know, like I was saying, this has become the purpose of my life. Like if I didn't have speaking or an opportunity like this to share my story, everything that I deal with would just be an added challenge in my life. Like my life would just be harder in every single way. Like getting dressed in the morning. I mean, when I wake up, like I get those spasms where my legs are locking up and my fingernails are digging into the palm of my hands. I mean, there is no break from being paralyzed. There's so many challenges that I have to deal with. Everything's just a little bit harder, but it's all worth it when I can, you know, post videos online and see how it's impacting people's lives, or go over, give a speech, like just open up my chest, take out my heart, and put it in someone else's soul that they can use to overcome the challenges that they face in their lives. There is no greater purpose in my life. And it answers all those why questions that I ever had and I ever get when I'm thinking like, why do I have to keep going through this? Why can't I just walk? Why can't I just be normal again? It's so that I can deliver that message. And man, I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, I love speaking. I love sharing this story. That's my goal in life, is to be the best speaker I can possibly be, to impact as many people as I can, turn this injury into a gift.
Are you going to write a book?
Yeah. So I'm in the process. So I've got the first draft of my manuscript all wrapped up. So just doing some editing and then going to approach some publishers. So no one we'll see when that's like actually on a shelf, but these are things I'm really passionate about. It's I wouldn't have it any other way. I love it.
So awesome.
All right, badass. Check it out. Here's what we're gonna do with you, man. There's gonna be a new race called the Superman. All right. If you get put into the realm of the quadriplegic and you come out all the way to where you finish the marathon or an iron, he's probably gonna be an Iron.
Well, no,
man,
you have to do. If he's doing a marathon, you have to do it with him.
I'm doing the marathon. I'm not doing the Ironman. He's
no.
I've already been through all that. I'm just saying, as far as for people to look to what a real man of iron is made of, it's basically getting reborn again. That's why when you get whipped back to your mama, it's when you learn how to walk. Mm-hmm. Like, knock-kneed, you know, and she's like, oh, you look so cute in your walker. No, we don't. We know we don't, Ma, but I love you.
Right.
Right? And then it's those baby steps. It's like trying to figure out what this does and how to rewire that thing when it's already in there. You get through all that and the pace at which you're going, you're going to change. Well, you change lives every day.
Are you married? Yeah.
Not married, but I got a girlfriend of about 2.5 years. We met over at Cal, and I mean, she's just amazing. She's okay. One of the best gifts I ever had.
24-year-old sister. That's really cute.
I'm serious. Where do we normally be running around?
No offense to your girlfriend. I'm just saying.
Yeah, gonna get us in trouble with the missus already.
No.
We ain't met her.
No.
So how can we support you? Where can our listeners find you and follow you?
Yeah, so you can find me on all social media platforms. I kind of got a monopoly on the name Robert Paler. There's not a lot of them out there. So just easy search for that. I mean, I got my website, robertpaler.com. But I mean, please, if you're inspired by this, reach out, because if not for yourself, for me, because that's what keeps me going every single day. And on my Instagram, I post like a daily rehab video, and I keep that day counter on there on the bottom left. So today is day 1752 since I had that injury, and like, I'm going to rock it. I'm going to get out there and work out. And because that's what it's about for overcoming a challenge, just like that daily consistent work. It doesn't have to be crazy intensity, but it's got to be consistent. And I hope that helps people, that when they're going through a challenge and they're having a hard time just getting up and putting in work every day, that seeing me go out and do it helps them. It's a reciprocal relationship that, you know, keeps me going, keeps them going. So that's the best way to follow me.
That's awesome.
All right, man.
Did you stay in touch with your spiritual director?
I do. Okay, yeah. We try to talk regularly. And I mean, he's helped me like through some of the darkest moments. And at the time he was a novice, he was becoming a priest. And, but now he's a priest out on the East Coast. And he's an awesome person. I needed him, and God spoke through him in some ways that I really needed in the beginning.
That's awesome. Yeah. So Marcus is being baptized and confirmed in the church on Easter.
Really?
Yes.
Congrats. Let it be known.
Yes, we're very excited. I'm very excited. So we just had our marriage blessed on Thursday.
That's right.
Yeah.
I ain't seen nothing like this yet. Wait till I get that freaking... Wait till I get that qual.
Yeah, we're excited.
That's great.
Yeah. Robert, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, man, I keep in touch.
We're going to stay in touch with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch, and we'll make sure we'll broadcast you, make sure everyone knows about you, because there's plenty of people that can absolutely benefit from what you've been through and what you're teaching. And, like, man, your whole life is set up to be a coach. Like, you're giving back and a motivation in itself. Those lights are strategically placed throughout the planet. You're one of them, man, so don't ever quit. Got me?
We need to send his info Absolutely. To Jen.
Yeah, we will.
Roger that. I mean, and my gratitude goes to you. I just can't tell you how excited I've been about this. And I got a buddy who's he's going to be starting Buds in a week, actually. And I was telling him about our conversation and all my friends. Like, when I was in that hospital bed, I mean, the things that got me through that was your story, Marcus. That's what kept me breathing and going, is just that never quit mindset. So I mean, this is a conversation I'm going to remember forever. It means so much.
Yeah, I won't either, bro. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Appreciate you all.
All right, man.